Hey, my name is Kevin Clark. I'm the host of a new football podcast called Slow News Day. I want to tell you about it. On Mondays, Lindsey Jones and I will recap the weekend in football that was, as well as look ahead to what's next. On Wednesday, the normal Slow News Day, the thing you've been watching for years, current players, current coaches, current analysts talking about the football world. And on Friday, a wild card. Could be some college football, could be more pro stuff. It's a video podcast, so you can watch it on Spotify or listen to it wherever you get your podcasts. Follow on Spotify. It's Slow News.
It's the Ringers Philly special presented by FanDuel. April showers bring a loaded sports calendar, and FanDuel is the place to bet on it all. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and get paid instantly when you win. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
The NBA playoffs are here, and we all know playoff mode is a thing. Listen to the evidence. Playoff crowds are going wild. Playoff players are lighting up the court. Even your speakers are in playoff mode. Okay, we'll take it down a notch, but just a notch, because this is the turn it up to 11 NBA playoffs. Playoff mode is clearly a thing. The NBA playoffs presented by Google Pixel continue on ABC, ESPN, TNT, and NBA TV.
Welcome to the Ringers Philly special. Sheil Kapadia joined by Ben Solak, ace producer Cliff Augustine. If there are people in the rooms next to me trying to get some shut-eye, I apologize. You're going to hear about an hour of Eagles talk here because we just came back from media night in Glendale, Arizona. It could be Benjamin Solak. Your room looks a lot like my room. It could be you. Yeah. Next door here to me. I don't even know.
I changed the camera setup so we can match. I was on the couch earlier, and now I'm in the desk chair. I was feeling the couch tonight, but I wanted our backgrounds to look the same. Breaking news on the podcast. Shields got arms. Shields got biceps. Shields got guns. I did not know this. Shields been doing pause and long sleeves all year, and Shield rolls up in the comfy short sleeve in the Glendale, Arizona hotel room looking big. Papa Kapadia been lifting. Tell the people.
I mean, listen, now anything you say the rest of the pod, I'm going to agree with. I'm going to compliment you on. This is the easiest way to get
Cliff
on
and
my...
I were slack jawed. He's wearing the pump cover. He's been hiding it from us. Shield's looking good.
This is my OJ Mariano t-shirt that my daughters got me for my, I think it was last year's birthday. Great t-shirt, nice fit, very comfortable. All right, Benjamin Solak, media night, your second media night?
First media night, second Super Bowl, but they didn't do media night last year because of COVID stuff.
Was my second media night. What were your general takeaways, your general impressions, and then we're going to get into how this Eagles offense matches up with the Chiefs defense after that.
Media night is super chaos. The Eagles are really well suited for it, though. They've got so many good, big personalities. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can put Kelsey and Lane and Mailata and Darius Slay and A.J. Brown all on podiums. That's a good... It's a good podium set, right? Kind of Jalen's just kind of doing Jalen's thing, you know, giving his calm, cool, collected answers. I haven't seen a single clip of Jalen on the timeline. I didn't even like try to get him. But I haven't seen a single clip. I think he was just doing his Jalen thing.
Now that you mentioned that, I was just scrolling through to make sure I didn't miss anything before we came on, and I also did not see a single clip. So just the setup is that it's at the Suns Arena across the street here, Footprint Arena. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Footprint.
You're on the court, and what Ben's talking about is they put 11 players for each team at kind of a riser, kind of a podium. And so those would be your biggest names. And so the cameras, the reporters all crowd around those setups and fire questions away at the bigger names. And then the rest of the players kind of just mill about. And if you have a question for them or want to talk to them or want to get them on camera, you can do that. So yeah, it did stand out to what you're saying, Ben. Many people made the comment, including Bo Wolf to me, that
the talent disparity, and it's not just personality disparity. Like, you look at the number of talented players that were just among those 11 for the Eagles, yeah, and you're like, yeah, these are all really good players. And not to say that the Chiefs guys were not good players.
Chiefs,
but
got George Karloftis up there. They got the second first round pick rookie edge rusher up there on a podium. Like, that's just, that's the nature of that team.
Jerick McKinnon, nice player, I think could really be a factor in the Super Bowl, but if Jerick McKinnon were on the Eagles, he would not be there. So I think some of the feedback I got, I don't know if you got it from our podcast with Mina Kimes, was like, well, gee, you know, it was more of the, well, why, you know, should the Eagles, I guess you guys are picking the Chiefs. And that wasn't it. And so to speak to the kind of the talent disparity, yes, the Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes and the Eagles have the much more talented roster. That is the fun sort of zoom out view of the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but they... I thought the Eagles did a great job with me, and I thought those guys were a lot of fun. Mailata, Lane, and Kelce all next to each other just killing it was a blast. Like, Mailata's, you know. Mailata got about, like, 19,000 questions about being Australian and answered every single one of them like it was the first time he'd ever been asked about being Australian. It was really
He's
cool.
a great interview.
He's the man.
He just seems like a fun guy, yeah.
I will say I met a couple of the, like Chiefs, like kind of, like, team execs and, like kind of the people that, like, run the business side of things. And they were talking a lot about, like, being very comfortable and how comfortable they are with Super Bowls now and how, like, regular it is for them. And I was like, okay, you guys can chill out a little bit. Like, that's enough with that. Like, oh, you know, did it, you know, COVID year, did it this year, looking forward, you know, kind of, we know the rhythm now, we know how it goes. Like, okay, well, stop that. No. We got a game in a week. Okay, no more like, oh, we're going to go to the four of the next 10. No dynasty talk here. I didn't enjoy that.
I actually thought that was something that actually stood out to me a little bit. You know, they did this thing in between when the Eagles had their session and the Chiefs had their session. And I think it was Jay Glazer, I want to say, was interviewing both Reed and Sirianni kind of at the same time. And I'm looking at them both, and Reed looked just very comfortable. And Sirianni, not that Sirianni.
You know, yeah, it was his classic Reed attire.
And I think the white Air Force Ones, I think that the team got him. I saw he was rocking those as well. And, you know, Sirianni's fine, but he's kind of has his hands behind his back. And it's like, we haven't talked about this. I don't know that this is a national storyline. Andy Reid is in his 24th season as an NFL head coach, and Nick Sirianni is in his second. Like, there is a different. Reid knows what to expect. Reid has been to Super Bowls. Reid has answered all these questions. And I think, you know, Sirianni's one of his best traits is that he's authentic. He's himself, it seems like, at all times. But still, this is a different setting. And that did stand out to me when both those guys were being interviewed.
What do you think Eagles fan sentiment towards Andy is right now and towards, like, Andy winning would be if that's what ends up happening and, like, the Chiefs end up winning and Andy gets his second Super Bowl? What do you think the vibes are going to be just from Philly towards Andy?
Oh, well, I mean, they're playing if they win, there's going to be no good feelings, like, good, you know, at least it was Andy, good for him. No, I don't. If it were his first, then maybe you would get some of that. But I think he's generally liked by Eagles fans, not loved. I think I would say liked. I think there is a segment of the fan base that probably doesn't share the same, you know, that affection towards him. But I think when they won their first one and the Eagles weren't involved, I think the majority of Eagles fans were probably like, all right, good for him. He finally got that one.
See, I think there will be, like, maybe not on Monday, but by Tuesday, in the event that the Chiefs win, I think you're going to get a decent, like, you know, it's a silver lining. Not silver lining's too far. The fact that it's Andy is a notable thing in Philadelphia. The fact that they lost to Andy and Andy won that second Super Bowl. And that's my read. I don't know if that's right or not. The reason, like, why I'm not sure where I land on it, and I'm not sure how confident I am in my prediction, is because, like you brought up, like, Andy's been coaching for 24 years. Andy was the Eagles head coach in 1999. I was born in 97. When I think football, I think Brian Dawkins, Brian Westbrook, Andy Reid. Like, that's who it is. And so for me, like, Andy could beat my son in a Super Bowl, and I'd be like, at least it's Andy, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's where he is to me. And so I'll be curious to see if that comes to pass, kind of what the vibes are. But every time I see Andy Reid, it makes me smile, man, just without fail.
Yes, but the Eagles fan experience is to work themselves into a lather that transforms into a hatred throughout the course of a week and throughout the course of a game. So there could be feelings right now. in terms of how they feel about Andy Reid or how they think they would feel about Andy Reid. You know, if it's like a hard-fought game, close game, Patrick Mahomes makes a couple good plays, that's sort of the scenario I think you would be talking about. That, oh yeah, okay, and Andy got a second one, Eagles will be back. I don't think that will be it. The Super Bowl, the stakes are too high. You form a hatred for the other team. It will be long-lasting. If the Eagles lose, there will be players on this Chiefs team that are talked about for the rest of your lives as Eagles fans, if you're right. listening. That's just how it is. So, I don't think Andy will do anything that will make, you know, people hate him or anything like that. But I would disagree with silver lining or anything that would make it that different, other than when it's just a hateable team. You know, if it's like the Patriots, Bill Belichick, well, now you don't even have to work for it. Like, you yes. already know how you feel about him. So I would agree that it's a little different than that.
If any other coach besides Bill Belichick beats the Eagles in a Super Bowl at any time in my lifetime, I'll go, well, at least it wasn't Bill Belichick. That's my official stance on Belichick as a coach. It's the opposite of
they
the
got
stance.
Belichick. I mean, I was thinking about that week. Remember he went, this doesn't get brought up. Remember he went to that Minnesota Timberwolves game on like Wednesday night and sat courtside, and it's like, oh, I guess Bill doesn't think he needs to put in any more prep for Nick Foles here, which is probably ridiculous because they had 2 weeks. But I thought that was a fun storyline and maybe the start of the downfall of the New England Patriots. Sorry.
Don't remember that at all. This is the first I'm hearing of this. That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, he sat courtside on a Wednesday night of Super Bowl
week. And
then
lost on Sunday to Nick Foles?
And then got cooked.
And didn't retire?
Cooked.
The speed with which I would have retired and faded into the background if I was caught courtside at a Wolves game. Wolves. The Timberwolves? The 2018 yeah. Timberwolves? I guess like young cat, maybe. Oh, despicable.
Yeah, I don't think either of these coaches will be doing that this week. All right, should we get into this matchup a little bit? Like, we planned out the week, and it's like, you're here, and it's like, well, it feels a little early. You don't have all your thoughts formed. But at the same time, when people listen to this, it's going to be Tuesday, the game Sunday. And I know we've touched on a lot of these things, but I think our plan was to just kind of dive in a little more. Eagles offense versus the Chiefs defense. Again, these don't have to be your final thoughts. Thursday is final day. We give our scores, we give our picks, our predictions on exactly how the game's going to play out, but this is where we are in the thought process now. How does that sound, Benjamin? Does that work for you?
Ironclad. Nothing I say will change after this podcast. I'm ready.
Okay. Let's start big picture.
Shiel goes, okay.
Eagles offense, Chiefs defense. You were gazzing up Spags a little bit on extra point taken yesterday. I think overall, this is a nice matchup for the Eagles offense. Like, we'll get into how we think they should play. Honestly, I don't think this is one where you need to sort of rethink everything you've done all season. Like, I think all the things they've done all season long, whether it's the run game, the diverse run game, the changeups in the run game, the RPOs, the taking shots on the outside when you have one-on-ones with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. Like, I think all of that should be available to them in this game, where a lot of their staples and the changeups off the staples should be available to them. I think this Chiefs defense is a well-coached unit. I think it's got some good players. I don't think it has great players. I think it's mostly a mediocre group. And I'll tell you what, I will be disappointed in this Eagles team if they come out and do not play well offensively and move the ball effectively and consistently against this Chiefs defense. Turnovers can happen. Like, it could be a bad offensive game if they turn the ball over. But if we're at the end of that game saying, man, they only had 240 yards and they had 4-3 and out, you know, and they were punting and it looked uneven, that would surprise me. And I think if you're an Eagles fan, that would probably disappoint you. Agree or disagree with my take there?
Agree. This team's total is set at 26.5 points. They should be expected to score in the 20s and ideally score higher than that. This is the sort of game where you need to be mentally prepared as a team, strategically prepared as a coaching staff to pour points on, right? Like, Shiel, you and I are sitting in the press box. First quarter ends. We look up at the scoreboard. 14-0 Eagles. How good are you feeling? I'm feeling like an increment better than I was pregame, and that's probably it, right? There is no point at which you are holding a multi-score lead against the Kansas City Chiefs at which you feel good until there are zeros on the fourth quarter play clock, and then you breathe, yeah. right? And so there has to be an attack mentality. This team is susceptible. This Chiefs defense is susceptible to big plays. They give up looks on the outside. They're beatable by star receivers. There has to be a aggressive fourth down mentality. You cannot get tricked by any sort of field position tomfoolery against this Chiefs team, right? You got to be going for it on fourth and twos from the 50-yard line. You cannot let the stage get big. You cannot get spooked playing in the Super Bowl versus the way you were playing in Week 7 against the Giants, right? Like, you got to stay true to yourself. And I think they will, right? We're talking about all this.
That's a great point, though, actually, which yeah. we haven't talked about yet. Yeah, I mean, we've...
Sometimes I make great points, Shiel. You don't have to sound so surprised.
Yeah,
you
know, no, that's a good one, because we've given Sirianni so much credit, but it is a different stage. And he did have, like, against the Niners, they did have, like, the one punt, right, from midfield on a fourth mm-hmm. and three. Like, this is not, you know, to quote John Harbaugh from, like, 4 years ago, when you play the Chiefs, it's not a field possession. It's not a field position game. It's a possession game. And so, like, there's not going to be that much of a difference if Patrick Mahomes starts with the ball at his own 40 or he starts with the ball at his own 20, because their offense is by far the best in the NFL. So that is something to watch. Like, I'm just taking it as, yeah, they've done this all season, so that's what they're going to do. But it is a different stage, and you are making these decisions very quickly, and maybe you start second-guessing it, or you get conservative or something like that. So I wouldn't rule, like, that possibility out completely, but I agree with you absolutely, obviously, with what the approach should be.
Yeah, so you got to be all right, attack mentality. You got to shoot downfield. Hurts has not been connecting on downfield passes over recent weeks. If you and I know that, and listeners know that, then the Eagles know that. Hurts knows that. You still got to shoot, right? You've been missing A.J. Brown. You've been leading him in third and eight. Well, guess what? When you get third and eight, him against Jalen Watson, ball's out. Like, it's got to be. It has to be that approach. You have to be aggressive on fourth downs. You have to be willing to give up short fields. You have to be willing to give up Chiefs back-to-back scores and have a drive in on downs. This is going to be a heavyweight fight. Chiefs are going to get some punches in. Your jaw's going to get a little bloody, right? Mouth's going to get a little bit bloody. And then critically, you got to be able to get seven and not three, which the Eagles have been extremely good in the red zone this year. They are an excellent red zone running team. This, like, talk about what you're preparing for. Like, the way that they have been converting short yardage all season, it just could not feel more important coming into this game, when finishing possessions with three instead of zero and seven instead of three is going to be so important. Their ability to convert on fourth and one, convert on fourth and a half, and then critically get inside the 10-yard line and just give, or give Reed, you know, get Jalen Hurts involved, whatever it ends up being. You have to be able to put seven on the board. And like there's a chance this game becomes a three is a quiet possession. Field goal is a loss. We're losing ground sort of a game. I don't want to. You do 10,000 things on Radio Row, right? You're on a bunch of places, and it feels like the more and more I say something, the more and more I'm jinxing it not happening. But I really, like, truly think we could be in for, like, a barn burner of a game. Just points on quick scores, on big drives, on incredible plays, and just, like, this scoreboard is just ratcheting up. Like, there's a chance we're all in the fourth quarter, just, like, 10 minutes left. We have no idea who's going to win, and we're all wired. Like, it's that level of points. And so you have to be getting seven instead of three. Schematically, I think there's stuff you feel really good about, and then there's stuff you're worried about, and the X's and O's and the nitty-gritty we'll get into. But it has to be as aggressive of a mindset as the Eagles have had all season. You cannot wilt. You cannot, you know, shrink in the moment. You have to walk in and say, we are the better offense in this game. That's what you're used to being. And you're kind of not in this game, but you have to continue to act like that. Like, you can play that way and win that way.
The NBA playoffs are here, and we all know playoff mode is a thing. Listen to the evidence. Playoff crowds are going wild. Playoff players are lighting up the court. Even your speakers are in playoff mode. Okay, we'll take it down a notch, but just a notch, because this is the Turn It Up to 11 NBA Playoffs. Playoff mode is clearly a thing. This is what you love about playoff basketball. The NBA Playoffs, presented by Google Pixel, continue on ABC, ESPN, TNT, and NBA TV.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected. Subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, they should have confidence going into this game. Like, it's a different matchup than the NFC Championship where you say, all right, that's a tough defense. They're going to get their wins. We're going to get our wins. Like, in this game, if you're the Eagles, you go into it expecting to be able to move the football. And it really, you know, it's going to start with their offensive line like it has all season, all five guys healthy against that Chiefs defensive line, which has some players. We know Chris Jones can be an absolute game wrecker on the inside. Frank Clark has been really up and down for them throughout the course of his career. George Karlaftis is a rookie. You know, Mike Dana has had some nice moments for them. So I'm not saying they don't have any players, but this isn't one of those weeks. Like, if this were in the regular season, we'd be going, man, I don't know if the Eagles offensive line is going to be able to handle this defensive line. Like, that is not the case here, except for, again, Chris Jones. And, you know, you should feel pretty good. He'll have his wins, no doubt, but you should feel pretty good about your interior, especially there with Jason Kelce potentially offering some help there. But maybe, I don't know how much you, I didn't ask you about this before, but the Chiefs do some good things to create one-on-ones with Chris Jones. He's actually had a lot of snaps on the edge still this year. They'll walk their linebackers up so that you have to account for them in protection, and hopefully that they occupy the center and then they get one-on-ones with the guard. Like, what are you watching in that matchup versus Chris Jones, the Eagles offensive line?
Yeah, so you want to create a one-on-one for your interior defensive lineman. How are you going to do it? First thing you said, right, is important. We got to walk the linebacker up. Right, Kelce is the best in the league at like 19 different things, so it's no longer interesting to be like, hey, Kelsey's the best in the league at this. But Kelce's the best in the league at taking that really quick set where he snaps the ball and just immediately hops right over to the guard. Just bounces on over, and all of a sudden, bang, it's a 2-on-1. Dickerson can't lose. Samuel can't lose. They set on defensive tackles really fast, right? They don't drop the guards in the center a lot. They get right on top of them. Well, if you put a linebacker right over Kelce's nose, you force him to respect the threat of that guy coming right down the pipe, right? You put two linebackers in each A-gap. Now you really force him to respect it. He has to look, pay attention. He has to scan left to right. Then you put Chris Jones between a guard and a tackle, and you go to work. The other thing you have to do with that, though, is you have to have a way to pull the tackle away from the guard, which means you need your outside pass rusher, Frank Clark, be lined up super, super far outside, and he needs to pull that tackle down and away. That's the sort of thing that the Eagles will let you do, right? Because the Eagles love leaving their tackles on those big islands, right? Big, big, big kick sides all the way back, whatever. So you'll get that when you get those rush looks. Now, in order to get into that look, you got to get the Eagles in third and long, because you can't walk out with that front on first and 10 and have the Eagles respect it. Eagles are going to run at it, and the Eagles are going to throw over the middle at it, right? And that linebacker who's dropping is going to be in trouble. So that's the first thing. Well, you can still find ways to do it without adding that linebacker up, right? You can run like stunts, twists, and games, which don't necessarily put Chris Jones in a one-on-one situation, but they put Chris Jones in a spot where, like, instead of being, you know, on Isaac Seumalo and Jason Kelce's going to come help him, he contacts Isaac Seumalo, but then slides over to Lane Johnson. And he knows he's going to Lane, and Lane doesn't know. And so he can be early on that. He can be on top of that. Mailata and Landon Dickerson on the left side, which Chris Jones typically rushes off the right, but on the left side, have had some issues with games this year. Mostly because Mailata is just like really, really aggressive. And when you're over aggressive against games, you can get in trouble. I wouldn't be surprised if they find ways to get Jones on the left side of the line when they want to get pass rush looks and have him run games and twists and stunts with Frank Clark over there. That's bespoke stuff, though, where you're kind of like game planning that out. In general, it's a tough game to get Chris Jones one-on-ones on the interior. The Eagles are extremely good at setting fast on defensive tackles. Kelce provides help, and they leave their offensive tackles one-on-one. They're kind of fine with that reality. If you want to play the Chris Jones at edge game, I'm okay with that, too. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Lane and Jordan against a guy who's obviously a great pass rusher, but is a defensive tackle moonlighting as an edge, I'm going to let my tackles lose that matchup before I start giving them help. And so really what this comes down to is, how do the Eagles beat Chris Jones? They don't get into third and 8. Get into third and 5. Force them to put that weird front, put linebackers in the A-gaps, mug stuff up, force them to do that on a down they don't want to do it in, and then either run the ball and get to 4th and 1, or dial it up, take a shot, shoot at it, right? Because if they're going to put those linebackers there, you can get a slant to A.J. Brown. If you hit him in stride, He's got to outrun a safety, and it's a house call, right? And that's why, like, you know, like I think the Chiefs are going to be forced to send some really aggressive blitz looks on, like, second and eight, on third and five, on some of these downs that are more, like, gray area downs. And when they do, Eagles are going to have a chance to burn them for really, really, really explosive plays. And I think they're going to be forced to do that because I don't think Chris Jones has a clear path to totally dominate this game on first and 10 against the Eagles front. He'll get his against Landon. Like, he'll get one or two against Landon, especially the elbows beat up. He'll get his against Sam Wallow. But it's really, really hard to win against the interior consistently against the Eagles. They're just too good.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I think if they're able to get one-on-ones, I can see him beating both those guys and making some high impact plays. But over the course of the game, I would be surprised. We just haven't seen a defensive player wreck a game against the Eagles this year because their offensive line is so good and so well coached and so talented.
Right. Another way to neutralize, like we talked about this with Hargrave and with Fletch a lot. Like, the Eagles are so good in the interior. Jordan Davis, like, what do you do with that? You don't deal with it. The easiest guys in the world to avoid are interior defensive linemen. They're always in the same general area, right? Like, if the Eagles decide they just want to live in their RPO slice game, right, where it's zone read, leave an unblocked edge, and then sometimes the tight end blocks that guy in the motion across the formation. Sometimes he leaves him alone. You throw it to him. Sometimes he wraps around him and he lead blocks. You can. Like, if you just want to play, we don't want to deal with Chris Jones today game, you can do that. It's a simple offense, and the Chiefs will probably be keyed in on it, and I think they won't have to play that game. But also, like, if you get to the sideline for the third drive, you got 3 points on the board. It's because Chris Jones had 2 sacks and the other 2 drives. You go, you know what? Screw this. We're running zone read. We're double-teaming this guy into the sideline, and we're going to beat George Karloftis. We're going to beat Willie Gay. We're going to beat L'Jarius Sneed. We're going to put this game on the boundary. The Eagles can do that in a heartbeat. That is not a difficult script for Shane Steichen to get to. And so even if Chris Jones really starts to impact the game, like, he was a defensive player of the year candidate, the Eagles can get away from him and force the Chiefs to really get in the bag to try to maximize him by just moving the game to the boundary.
There really is a scenario where they run all over the Chiefs, whether it's getting a lead early and then, you know, just long drives in the second half where they're gashing them. Maybe it's stuff's not working early on and they're just like, all right, let's get back. Because as we talked about previously, that run game with this O-line just gives them that floor. It gives them that, hey, let's settle things down. Hey, let's find something that works. And they always find something that works eventually with that run game. And again, specifically against this defense, which is not a great run defense, you should be absolutely able to run the football against this group.
The single case that I think makes the Eagles so tempting to pick, which, like, I think I'm going to stay on Chiefs for the rest of the week, but I've got closer and closer to picking the Eagles. The one single item that makes the Eagles case is just if they can get that 14-0 lead in the first quarter, if they can get that multi-score lead, there's a chance they, in a way we have yet to see them, just sit on this game in the second quarter, in the second half, right? Like, they, like you say, they should be able to run the ball all over this Chiefs team. And if you're right now, if you're Kansas City and you're listing things in your meeting room you're worried about, it's Patrick Mahomes getting 3 drives in the second half. It's the Eagles' ability to just go, eight-minute drive, we're out of here by 9 local. We're hoisting the Lombardi Trophy within a cool 3.5 hours. They really, like, they'll be able to run on this interior. They will be able to run to the boundary. And Jalen Hurts will be able to break tackles on the second level. They should walk out with a very heavy run script and use it until Mahomes forces them into a shootout, because that'll shorten the game for them, which I do still believe is to their benefit. And if they're protecting a lead, all the more power to them.
When the Eagles pass the ball, it's a little bit of a different story. Now, areas to attack here. L'Jarius Sneed was part of media night, but I don't think he's been cleared to play in this game. He's recovering from a concussion, so I guess we will see if he plays in this game or not. We talked about it early in the week that if he doesn't play, you're looking at three cornerbacks.
I just checked. He said he cleared concussion protocol. He said that at his availability. Okay. So, all right, L'Jarius Sneed, baby, welcome to the game.
That's a big player that the Chiefs get back there, L'Jarius Sneed, and then they will be playing 2 rookie corners alongside him. And then when they go to dime, they'll bring in Brian Cook and have another rookie, 3 rookies in their dime package. So you look at where the Eagles can attack. I mean, the Chiefs 31st in DVOA against number one wide receivers this season. I mean, I just think the Eagles, when they get their shots in this game, again, are going to be able to take their shots on the outside. The Chiefs press, I think, the most in the NFL. They're second most in the NFL. A.J. Brown leads the NFL in yards per route run against press coverage. I think he's going to be a guy who gets involved early and often. This is a different Chiefs defense. As we talked about, I think with Mina, this is not the, hey, man coverage, blitz all the time type Chiefs defense. I mean, they are way more middle of the pack. They're playing, I think, around 70% zone coverage. They're mixing in a lot of split safety zone coverages, which we've seen a lot of teams in the NFL. Obviously, that's the way it's been trending. They've gone along with that trend in this game. So I don't think they're going to do just one thing. I mean, you made the good point that, Spagnuolo is, you know, his strength is coming up with these one-off game plans in the playoffs to keep the Chiefs in games and then let their offense win these games. So how do you think they're going to match up with this Eagles offense, specifically in the passing game?
I'm worried about Hurts in this game throwing the football. I am. With the data that we've seen on terms of how he's performed recently, right, a little bit more inaccurate down the field, brought up on the show with Mina yesterday, Jalen Hurts has been over 15% inaccurate throw rate in each of his last five games. We're seeing a stretch of play from him over the last month and a half, pre-injury but also post-injury, of just less accurate play. Some of it's probably regression, right? Like, we should talk about that. Like, as we've brought up before, the fact that Jalen Hurts has improved seven consecutive off-seasons is insane and is also still the case. He still is absolutely a better player than he was last year. But, like, sometimes, you know, you don't get to just be better every single week for most of a decade, even when you're Jalen, right? So some of it's just like kind of natural. It's going to happen. It's the, like, Mahomes had regression last year. You know what I'm saying? Everybody, it happens to everybody. Some of it's the injury, right? Some of it you don't really know. You know what I'm saying? Could just be noise. He walks out and has the best game of his career. I wouldn't be surprised. It's Jalen Hurts in a Super Bowl. Like, he's going to do some cool stuff. I have no doubt about that. However, Hurts this season, we talk about how he performs against the blitz, and you're facing a pretty blitz-heavy team in the Chiefs. Hurts is particularly shaky against zone blitz teams. When blitzed and facing zone coverage, Hurts negative 0.26 EPA per play. That is the fifth lowest of starting quarterbacks this year. Only guys below him are Jameis Winston, Justin Fields, Tyler Huntley, and Mac Jones. Why zone blitz in particular? When Hurts is blitzed, he wants to get out of the pocket. He's done a much better job this year of, like, negating defensive line pressure by buying a half second in the pocket. And so accordingly, like, his numbers when pressured look worse than they did last year, but that's because he's doing a better job, like, not taking stupid pressures. You see what I'm saying? So he's kind of eliminating those from the sample. But those defensive line pressures he's handling, he's buying more time in the pocket. This is something he's improved on this year. Pocket management, we've talked about it before. But when he's blitzed, he just wants to leave. That's a trained reaction. That's from years of saying, oh, they blitz me? Sick. If I get out of the pocket, there's nobody here. I can just run. Like, we're doing great. Zone blitzes in particular, he leaves the pocket, everybody's got his eyes on him, right? People, the defensive backs, linebackers, are able to see what he does because they're playing with zone eyes. They're playing with eyes through the receiver into the backfield. And so when he does his escape and he goes to the right, and a lot of these blitzes are designed to get him moving to his left. He hates moving to his left. And so if he moves to his left, Eagles are not in a good spot with him throwing the football. He's a right-handed quarterback. He struggles moving to his left. That's a very regular thing. So, you know, a lot of these blitzes are designed to make him move to his left. But if he moves to his right, defenses are anticipating this. They know this. They know the scramble drill rules. And now it's him running out of bounds, and it's second and nine. And you're just in a good spot. Like, even the Niners, not necessarily blitzing as much, but just mush rushing, making him feel uncomfortable. He flees the pocket, and then they play on from there. Hurts has got a predictable response to blitz, and with zone blitz particularly, you get to keep eyes on him. The best way to beat zone blitz is to have hot reads and replace it with routes and throw to the receivers, and just Hurts doesn't like to do that. He would rather scramble and try to find the big play. And so this zone blitz approach, the Chiefs 11th in the league this year in terms of the number of plays in which they've been zone blitz. Like you brought up, this is their highest zone coverage rate in the last 4 years that they've had with Spags. They're decently well-suited to approach Hurts with a game plan very similar to one the Cardinals did, where the Cardinals were playing with a lot of zone eyes, blitzing a lot of guys on third down, trying to force out screens, trying to force out checks against the blitz. And when Hurts did keep the ball in the blitz, he was taking pressures, he was taking sacks, he was scrambling, he was throwing the ball away. He wasn't as effective. I think that Hurts' recent play, plus the shoulder, plus the way the Chiefs play defense, there's a way it could be a tough game for Hurts throwing the football.
I really have no feel on how he's going to play. Like, everything you said there made sense, and I just think it's such a wide range of outcomes. I could see this being a game where he struggles. I could see this being a game where he lights it up, and we say, hey, large samples are more useful than small samples, and the offense has been second in DVOA when Jalen Hurts has started, and he comes through in a big spot because, again, this is not the most talented Chiefs defense. But I think the part, if you're an Eagles fan, that gives you some doubt, some concern, is just those splits are pretty telling, you know, like again, like you said, against the blitz, 23rd in EPA per play. When he faces four or fewer, he's a top five quarterback. I mean, he's fourth in EPA per play when teams rush four or fewer, and that's because their offensive line can handle it. He can find his answers. He can make a play with his arm. He can make a play with his legs. It doesn't matter. And so I think there will be instances, certainly in this game, where they're just trying to speed him up, where they're trying to force him into a mistake. I mean, when you said that about forcing him to the left, I can just picture L'Jarius Sneed blitzing from the slot and coming free and him going to his left. And is it a negative play or is it just a throwaway? Who knows? But those types of things happening. So, yes, I think that absolutely is going to be key in this game. And then just, you know, his splits against man and zone are pretty telling as well. I mean, Jalen Hurts against man coverage, second in EPA per play this season, behind only Patrick Mahomes. Against zone, 21st in EPA per play. And I think that goes to what you're saying. I mean, your legs are going to be more of a factor against man coverage. You can scramble easier. By the way, the Chiefs have played a lot of two-man coverage, which is, you know, two deep safeties, man coverage across. That is not a good coverage to play against a scrambling quarterback like Jalen Hurts. So just even in that Bengals game, you saw them use that on third down. I wonder if that will even be part of their game plan in this game.
I'll be curious to see if they run with like a traditional spy or with like a little fake spy. They try to run with a traditional spy, right? Nick Bolton, middle linebacker, hanging out 2 yards past line of scrimmage, waiting to see where Jalen Hurts goes. Hurts is going to run for 900 yards. I love Nick Bolton. I was wrong on Nick Bolton coming out. He's been a very impressive pro. He's rounded out the rough edges of his game. This guy cannot do Jalen Hurts in the open field. Hurts is bigger than him. It's just not, this is not where you want to be. They got to do kind of the quasi spy, where instead of I'm spying him because I don't know which way he's going to go, it's I use my defensive line to rush him one direction, and then my spy is kind of waiting for him over on that side of the field, right? Let Nick Bolton only have to play half a field. Now you're somewhere that you're more comfortable. So I'm curious to see if they spy him. I don't think they will. I think they're going to want to play with zone eyes. The other tricky thing about playing with zone eyes, though, and like eyes through the receiver into the backfield, is that they can't double a receiver when they do that, because when they double, they try to play with brackets. They try to play with man coverage brackets. And that's where, like, AJ can make the money. AJ can make the $100 million in this game, period. I said I could see Hurts struggling. I said I could see Hurts having a bad night. I'm worried about him against this pass defense. With that said, he could get 150 yards on two throws, man. Like it's, this is not a particularly fast secondary. It's not a particularly well-tackling secondary. And they are very susceptible to things that people have been hitting them with all year. Like the double moves against the brackets, the outside deep corner routes and the deep out routes against like when they're playing match coverages, like all the good offenses. You watch Raiders film, you watch the Bengals film, you even watch like the Niners film. Like they got blown out in that game, the Niners did, but the Niners still put up points in that game. You watch the way teams attack this defense, like everybody knows. Like, all right, these are the spots in the zones. You know, they got a rookie corner and they got a rookie safety and their spacing's not that great. And like Trent McDuffie's been playing a lot better recently, but we can pick on him in the slot. And like Nick Bolton's not the biggest guy, so we can throw middle of the field. Like there's just a lot of gaps. And so I could see Hurts having a game where you're like, okay, that process was bad. You shouldn't be playing like this. You left an open read. Also, congratulations on the 60-yard touchdown. Like that's the talent disparity between the Eagles receiving core and the secondary, and that's the evidence, the evident holes in the Chiefs secondary that the Eagles coaching staff is seeing all over the film. So, like, yeah,
I think Hurts might struggle against these guys. I think if he gets into a third and seven, I think it's going to be in a bad spot. I think that they could have some drives that stall out quickly and that he's shaky to begin. I also will be the least surprised, dude, if he has 200 passing yards in the first half.
Yeah.
Right? Because the potential for explosive plays in this game, both in terms of high depth of target and also high run after the catch, are enormous. And like, if we haven't done the full preview of Eagles defense, Chiefs offense yet, but I think you and I are in lockstep where we're like, hey, the Chiefs might score a lot of points, man. Like, if you get that game outcome, explosive plays where you got to live. I think they can run the ball in the well. I think they can inch out those drives. But if you're trying to inch out drives against Mahomes and one drive stalls, you're fighting an uphill battle. You need to be able to hit explosives. And I think they will, even though I also think Jalen's going to have like a bit of a shaky game. And that goes back to your salient point. Very difficult to get a thumb on the pulse. Very hard to get a feel Monday at 10:30 p.m. Mountain Time as to what Jalen's going to look like against this Chiefs team.
Mountain Time's like really difficult to get. I mean, I cannot get used to a Mountain Time. I mean, the 2 hours, I don't know that I've ever been in here
with the
2 hours.
Let me ask you this. Here's a good ringer question. Okay. How do you find yourself figuring out what time things are? Because when, like, you know, I got the note from you, like, okay, the Metapod are recording at, like, whatever, 6:30 Eastern. And my ringer head, where I'm used to talking to a bunch of people that work in L.A. in Pacific time, I go, okay, 6:30 Eastern, so that's 3:30 Pacific, which means it's 4:30 here. I can't go Eastern to Mountain. I have to go Eastern to Pacific and then up to Mountain. That's my process.
I don't like to inconvenience anyone at any time. And so I feel like in my head, it's probably not... I'm not being that considerate, but in my head, I'm being considerate if when I send a message, I'm using that person's time zone is what I try to do.
You should see, listeners, the organized, well-punctuated emails and Slacks and text messages I've gotten all season from Shield. I should do that. I should do a
Oh,
Shield.
Is that right? I didn't know where you were going with that.
I should do a Shield text dump to celebrate the end of the season. I was just a number of like... 9 hours before a pod, I forgot we were recording it that day. I get a text from Sheil. I will be discussing the Eagles, the Bengals, and the Patriots. Like with like enters in the text, like make sure it's like nicely formatted.
Yeah.
We're going at 11:30, period. Let me know if you need me to change anything, period. And then I text back like, lol, okay, with no capitals. just no, nothing. Just my youth coming out.
That is a generate. Yeah, I don't. I'm trying to think of like my friends, my idea. I think most of them do still text with the proper sentences and punctuation.
I really used
but
to.
Not you all find, of them.
You find some old Ben Solak tweets. There's some capitals and some periods in those, just like Shio Kapadia tweets now. I've been taken away. I've been perverted by the young generation.
No longer. Yeah, the Mountain Time. Mountain Time. Can't get used to it. It's okay. We'll get used to it. We're here for such a long time. I mean, what kind of bag did you pack for this trip?
So I was in Mobile last week, right?
Yeah.
This week.
What are you doing? Wait, you're
I got
out of your home for like 3 months.
Shiel, I got the checked bag. I come into the Grand Rapids Airport, fly to Mobile, put it on the scale, 51 pounds. Oh, perfect. Yep. Grab this thing, grab that thing, 50. Gorgeous. I go down to Mobile. My sister gives me some stuff. I kind of repackage some things. I put some more things in the backpack. I get to the Mobile airport to fly out. 51 pounds. Oh, my goodness. I love my ability to pick up a suitcase and go, yeah, it's about 50. On the nose this trip.
But when you're at 51, do they make they tell you to take stuff
Grand
out
Rapids,
to get
I
it to 50?
I took a couple things out. Mobile.
Okay.
The
they said
the
you're good?
It was like, yeah, we're good. Don't worry about it. And then my wife was out here this weekend. We were visiting her sister who lives out here. And I gave her a few things. I was like, oh, I don't know why I packed this. I don't need this. I will say, though, I was very dumb. And I packed no just like athletic shorts. No just like casual shorts. And so this morning at 4 o'clock Mountain Time, local, I woke up. And I was just so jacked for the day. This first media day. It's Super
You're
Bowl.
Crazy.
We're here. Shields getting o'clock. In. I was so pumped. I couldn't fall back asleep, and then I was like, I should just go to the gym, just get a workout and start my bicep curls, look like Shio Kapadia. And then I realized I didn't have any shorts. And so I was like, okay. And then I just laid in bed for 2 hours, I read my book, and now I'm exhausted already. And we got like 5 days left of this.
There are places to, you know, we are in downtown Phoenix. There will be places if you want to grab a pair of athletic
shorts. Yeah, not at 4 a.m. when I had like all of the energy in the entire world for no reason.
So my wife told me that I should weigh my bag at home, and I'm like, come on, no, this is going
to
be fine.
What do you think I am? What is this?
I get to the airport. I go to check the bag, and listen, I like to, if I'm gone for 7 days, I'm packing anything that I think I could need for those seven
That's
days.
Correct.
So I put it on. I'm at 53, Benjamin. Oh. So my guy, very nice, by the way. You know, Philadelphia airport workers get a bad reputation. This man was very nice. He said, just take some stuff out. He said maybe a pair of jeans. Do a pair of jeans weigh 3 pounds? That was literally his suggestion. He goes, maybe a pair of jeans. I'm like, I don't know what a pair of jeans weighs, but I take
Me
it
neither.
Out.
I don't you own know, a pair. I haven't owned a pair my whole
yeah,
life.
You don't own a pair. I threw some stuff in my laptop bag, brought it back, and I was 49, I think, coming back. Done. So I was safe. But I felt like my Indian bona fides were really strong right there, because this is like anytime there's a trip to India, you got to weigh those bags. You got to make sure you're not over. You go over. He told me, he goes, if you're over, it doesn't matter if it's 1 pound or whatever. He's like $100 extra. Yeah. He's like, so you got to get to 50 or that. Under. So that had never happened to me. I have to tell my parents. I think they'll be very proud of me.
Oh, well done. All right. You know what my main media night experience is, though? We should have talked about this at the top. I feel so insecure whenever you and Bo are hanging out. I'm always like, yep, that was his first love. There he is. It's him and Bo. And I'm just new guy. New guy over here, and I got like, we ain't got no named scales. We ain't got no bird puns over here. Just doing my best with my jean jokes, my temperature jokes. Just trying to fill the shoes of the one that got away, Bo Wolf. It's tough. It's tough out here for a guy.
Well, we might do a Birds with Friends crossover week, so you could explore those feelings further. We can all talk them out and see where we are. By the way, Mina's thing about her husband and those jeans, washing them in the ocean, that was like the most unbelievable, incredible thing I've heard all year.
Are we breaking this down now that she's gone and she won't hear this? That's
no,
bananas.
I was just... No, like I was just thinking about it more today. I'm like, that's the coolest thing I ever heard. Like if I had jeans that I could only wash in the ocean... I would just feel like the man. That's incredible.
That is wealth, right? That's what wealth is. Wealth is once you own jeans that have to be washed in the ocean. That's my thought.
I just love that.
Once you have things that can only be treated a certain way, you are wealthy. Right now, everything I treat in my life exactly the same. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, I spent $20 on this at Target. I can spend $20 on this at Target again if I need to. We're good. I got vanilla syrup on my shirt earlier today, and then I got ranch dressing on my second shirt. I'm just living. I ain't got no jeans that need to be washed in the ocean.
All right. We did have that bet that you were, if you lost, you were going to have to wear jeans. I don't think you lost that bet.
I don't remember what
it was. All right. We'll figure that out. All right. So I think the Eagles have, like, if you're an Eagles fan, there's really good stuff you feel like your team can hang their hat on.
Yeah.
The run game, the O-line, and I'm with you. A.J. Brown, you didn't even mention Devontae Smith. A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert against the people who are going to be covering A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and Dallas Goedert. That is a nice edge in the Eagles' favor. Again, all the answers that have been available to them all season long on pretty much a weekly basis, aside from a game here and a game there, those answers are going to be available for them again.
Can I drop
in this
one
game.
More name?
Yeah, go ahead.
I feel like we leapfrogged him because everybody's pumped out Kenny Gainwell. Miles Sanders has a chance to make some wild free agent money tonight, or Sunday night, I should say.
I don't know if I agree with this. Go ahead, tell me your
take. I mean, like, agree with the make the free agent money?
I just feel like most teams are going to look at it. Like, I'm not saying no one's going to pay him, but the circumstance, he's played really well. He's had the best year of his career by far. I've been impressed with the way he's improved in really every aspect. At the same time, I do think teams, when they're evaluating who they want to sign at running back, are going to be like, he had that offensive line and he had Jalen Hurts. Well, yeah, okay. Yeah. We're not overpaying.
That was a rhetorical device. I don't think he's making $8 million per and then he's going to rush for 100 yards. He's going to make like $12 million per.
Gotcha. Okay.
But I think he has a chance to have a contract that's decently up there. He's young. He's athletic. He's improved. But this game, man, like Sanders won't win MVP. That's unreasonable. That Hurts is going to take it or some defensive player is going to take it, some bigger name. But there's a chance like the actual functional most valuable player, the guy like, if he's doing yeoman work between the tackles, if he's running the football well, like you talk about big A.J. Brown game, big Dallas Goedert game, there's a chance Sanders is, 100 yards in this game. Even with them rotating the backs. Like, he again, like, you get to the second level in this Chiefs defense, you can really rip off some big yardage. So, yeah, I think big A.J. Brown game is definitely in the cards. I think big Goddard game in terms of volume is 100% in the cards. But Sanders is the one Eagles back where, like, when I'm looking at, like, building out bets and stuff, I keep on going, like, yeah, 60-plus yards, 70-plus yards, 80-plus yards. Why not? You know, like, they're going to run the ball a lot, and he's going to be successful. I think it's going to be a big Sanders night.
Could this be, and I think this would be the first time in NFL history, could there be some buzz about Jason Kelce as representing the O-line winning the MVP in this game?
Okay.
Like, it goes to what you said, right? They're gashing him on the ground, and every highlight is like Kelce's pulling or Kelce's pancaking someone, and then some prominent NFL, Peter King or someone in the fourth quarter tweets out, yes, Jason Kelce should be MVP of this game. They got the podcast. This is the Kelce Bowl. If ever there were a time, this would be the game, right?
Yes. Okay. So Kelce is... So the MVP voting happens before the fourth quarter's over, which is the dumbest thing.
I remember
thing in the
you told me
world.
That, and it
has
made
to
me
go
so
in before
mad.
The 2-minute warning. That's 20% of the vote, and then 80% of the vote, I think, is fan voting. I might have those roles flipped. Actually, it might be 80% of the vote.
No, yeah,
is the
that
writers.
Can't be.
Yeah,
right.
80 can't be fan. Yeah. I think it's 20% is fan voting. But if you and I just walk around the press box the whole game, just being like, "Wow, it's crazy that," you know. who's a famous sports writer? Peter King. It's crazy that Peter King's voting for Jason Kelce for MVP. That's nuts. And we're just like kind of like bounce around like, did you hear that Jenny Brentes is voting, you know, that's Jason Kelce MVP? That's crazy. We just do the propaganda inside, and then we have the Eagles fan base and the listeners of Philly Special just nuke the fan voting with Jason Kelce. We could very reasonably get this done. Fix the vote. Fraud. Center gets MVP.
Cliff is texting us or messaging us. No chance that that's going to happen.
There's no chance in hell. There's no chance in hell. And you know why? It's because if Jalen Hurts gets like 200 plus yards and like two touchdowns, it's
okay,
his.
Okay, here we go.
It's probably true.
Jason Kelce touchdown.
Yeah.
All right. Now I know what you're saying. How? He's in the center of the line. There's no way to make him eligible. Cam Jurgens snaps the ball. Kelce at like fullback. Tight end, play action pass, running back pass situation. Kelce scores a touchdown in this game. He's winning MVP. Guaranteed.
Oh, all right. So shout out to Mike Golick Jr., who loves the big man TD. That's my guy. But
I saw your guy today. I was on the show.
Shout out to him. That's my guy. But I could also see a scenario where it's like, all right, A.J. Brown, 113 yards and a touchdown, or like Hassan Reddick, a sack and a half, strip fumble. They're like the layers of people that he's going to have to go through in order to get the MVP would be insane. But just now that you guys put it in my head, I want to put some money on that. Like,
right.
I really do.
I'm
really, really, really
the FanDuel people, and I'm going to ask for Jason Kelce MVP odds. And then I'm going to take it, and then I'm going to fix it.
Look at this flexing, Cliff. He's going to hit up the FanDuel people. I don't have FanDuel people. Do you?
I was about to say, who from FanDuel?
I mean, unbelievable.
You know?
First, he said I was on your boy's show today, and then the next line, he says I'm gonna message the FanDuel people. I mean, talk about flexing in Phoenix right here, this guy.
Hey, Benny Solzi, he's connected. That's why I said next time I go back to Philly, I need to go to one of them restaurants. I'm gonna just drop his name.
Yeah, okay. All right, MVP. The longest odds you can bet. Harrison Butker and Jake Elliott plus 28,000. Reed Blankenship plus 24,000. Look at Reed.
Okay. I mean, light your money on fire. How would any, if are they, is anyone, I can't.
Chad Henne plus 10,000. Yeah, okay. No Jason Kelce. I will rectify this. I will do my darndest. I will get Jason Kelce MVP odds plus 9999999999, and then I will fix the voting. This is how you become a millionaire.
Last thing I was going to bring up with the, first of all, what I was going to bring up is, how are you still awake? So you woke up at 4 a.m. and you have not slept since then?
I'm in agony. I'm not having a good time.
Oh, okay. Because you seem very chipper. You don't, okay.
Jill,
you're in agony.
All right. Went to Five Guys. I got two cheeseburgers. And as I ate those cheeseburgers, which I call emotional support cheeseburgers, because they make me feel better. I said, okay, you should have one more pod and then you can end this day. And then I got on this call, I was like, man, I have no energy. But the second I get going, like I get on a pod, I'm jacked up. And that's why all of our evening pods are so bad for me, is because I'll close this call and I'll take like an hour to fall asleep.
Well, all right. Well, listen, we only have like a couple more of the evening ones. And once the off season hits, we can tape these bad boys whenever you want.
Wait.
You'll be 4 a.m. when you're awake there. Last thing I wanted to bring up was this was in my 25 things column today on the Ringer.com. Eagles 12 personnel this year. If you look at all the groupings that have been used for at least 50 snaps league wide, there's 99 of them. Eagles in 12 personnel has been the third best personnel grouping in terms of EPA per play. And so I was looking at the Chiefs defense. How do they usually play against 12 personnel? They're usually in their base defense. So I think this is one of those simple ones that a former coach named Chip Kelly used to talk about when he was talking about 12 personnel, although those 12 personnel groupings didn't work as well, but they put their big boys on the field. You can throw the ball easier. They put their little guys on the field. You can run the ball easier. And so that's just something to keep an eye on. Those numbers surprised me a little bit, how good the Eagles have been out of 12 personnel. But that's something to keep an eye on here in this game, how much they use that, how the Chiefs defend it, and whether they're throwing or whether they're running out of it.
And it's funny because like the Chiefs have exactly the sort of guy you want to have to play light personnel against 12. Which is L'Jarius Sneed, who is going to be available for this game. Sneed was a safety at Louisiana Tech who was drafted to play outside corner, who now plays the slot. Like, weird career arc there for the Chiefs. But the reason you like him in the slot, the reason you like him inside, and like they'll play McDuffie inside too, but against the Eagles, I imagine it'll be Sneed. The reason you play him on the inside is because he's a functional run fitter. He's a big dude. He used to play safety. So now you're playing basically big nickel, right? Three safeties, two corners, even though Sneed is technically a corner just because he previously played safety and is the body type of a safety. This is the sort of guy you have. He's a nice jackknife, right? He solves a lot of problems for you. With that said, while Sneed is the sort of dude you want to have against 12, the Chiefs' second level isn't like Nick Bolton, Willie Gay, right? Their run defense, you know, you get Derek Nnadi and Mike Dann on the field. These are beatable guys, you know? And so it's like, yeah, they have Sneed. They feel good about that 11th player. It's just the other six guys that are in the box that are gettable. So yeah, Eagles, I think, are going to be a lot of multiple tight end, and the Chiefs, I think, we're going to, you know, little preview for next week, little teaser, or tomorrow, I should say. I think
tomorrow, next
play.
Week. Next
yeah,
week, it's over.
Me. Like I said, I'm on fumes. I think the Chiefs are going to play a ton of multiple tight end. It is the Jack Stoll versus Noah Gray Bowl, baby. What are the MVP odds on those fellas? They're going to be defining players in this one.
That's a good segue, so that we will get to that on the next episode. Let's give a final thought. So my final thoughts, Eagles offense, I think all the pieces are in place for them to play really well, to move the football, to put up a lot of points, to use the things that have gotten them here, to not overthink it. And we mentioned Kenny Gainwell earlier. Again, the Chiefs are not good at covering running backs out of the backfield. If you look at DVOA, I think that's another option that's available to them. So there's a scenario where it looks a little shaky because some of the blitz schemes, some of the zone blitzes that Ben mentioned get to Jalen Hurts, produces some negative plays. But I think overall, if you get enough offensive possessions, that's only going to be the case for so many of them that eventually you'll have answers. You'll hit on some of those plays with your matchups in the passing game and with your dominance in the running game. And so I expect the Eagles. I will be surprised on Sunday night, I think, if we're saying, man, the Eagles offense, you know, they scored 17 points in this game, and that's why the Eagles lost this game. Now, if it's, you know, 23 and you're saying they didn't play great, maybe, but right. I expect them to be kind of in the mid upper 20s, maybe even get to 30 points in this game.
I think it could be one of those things where they do actually score like 24, but then there's also that sense of disappointment, like, you know, wow, they should have done more. Like, why didn't they do more?
Left some on the field. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's because, I mean, there's a chance that they did, right? You know, certainly some drives ended bad, but also there's the sense of that because like the last game they played was the conference championship and they scored 31 points in the game before that was the divisional round and they scored 38 points. And when Jalen Hurts was healthy previously, they were scored 48 against the Giants and 35 against the Titans and 40 against the Packers and yada, yada, yada. You know, like 25 points is like, you know, with the way this offense is produced. Yeah. I think, you know, against a middling defense, yeah, you expect a little bit more. I think the running game is going to be extremely successful.
And I think the Eagles would be wise to run the football on any neutral script they can get for as long as they can get it. I think the passing game is going to find explosives, going to find out-of-structure plays, but I think it might be a little inconsistent snap to snap. I think there might be some disappointing reps. I think there might be some sacks, some three and outs, and some of those mistakes. And the hope is that those aren't big enough. Those don't cost them as much in field position, cost them as much in time of possession, that this game gets out of hand such that they have to leave the running game entirely. So I think it's a good offensive performance, but it is a fragile one, and it's game script dependent. I think if they get behind, again, they'll be able to score their explosives, but it's a dangerous spot. If they intend on winning this game, it is score quick, convert, get seven, get a lead, and then really try to run this thing out early. Like, not like second quarter, time of possession, but just if you can get this thing onto a run script for as long as possible, the longer you're on a run script, the more that benefits you.
We shall see. So that's positive. I think some of the feedback I got was, you guys were, going all in on the even for the column I wrote. I got a couple comments like, oh, I know who
I
you
got
think
yelled
you're going to win the
for,
game. What are you talking
booking
about?
Booking my friend Mina just that she and I could freak out about Mahomes together, which is interesting because you booked Mina and you never, I always get ats of things that you do. And so I was like, I can't believe Ben would do that.
I didn't get included on that. Whoever sent that to you, I don't even know what you're was that a private message? Was it a tweet? What's
I got
going
a tweet
on?
That was like, oh, of course, okay. @BenjaminSolak booked his friend Mina because they're both obsessed with Patrick Mahomes. That's all they want to talk about. And I was just like, okay, well, whoever thinks I'm capable of booking one person needs to meet Sheil, and then they'll understand.
All right, so this is was a more sunny side of the Eagles in this episode because we think their offense is going to play well. All right, we will be back tomorrow to talk more about Patrick Mahomes and how good he is and what the Eagles can do to slow him down, what their game plan should be. We're working on a little crossover episode with Birds with Friends. Thursday, we'll have the Thursday 10. Friday, Benny's working on some maybe some special stuff to get to you, a little bonus stuff on this feed. So thank you to everyone for listening. Keep the ratings, reviews, everything coming. Don't forget, I think we have room for questions for the Thursday 10. I think a lot of them were outdated. So if there's something where you're saying, man, they've spent so much time talking about this game and they haven't covered X, get it in there. #RingerPhilly on Twitter, and I will look at those. I'll just say we're not doing any draft questions or free agency questions in this episode.
I will do the draft questions. Send them to me.
We have a long time. We have a long time to get to all those. We're not going to get to them here. All right. Thank you to the great Cliff Augustine for producing on Eastern Standard Time. He's up really late. We appreciate it. We'll be back tomorrow on the Ringers Philly special.